Hey everyone, it's Tad Hargrave from Marketing for Hippies, and we're on our third call. So to recap where we've been so far, the first call we talked a lot about the three most fundamental things you need for your business: the platform, the container, and the paths. But last week we really went in deep into the platform, and this week we're going to go deeper into your perfect client. So you're going to get some handholding on how to navigate this tricky sticky wicket of who you work with. So this is hands down the most important issue in marketing. Niche, target market, chosen audience, tribe, whatever you call it, every choice you make in marketing boils back down to this. So what I'd love to do is to start off with a little bit of discussion on the Facebook wall, and I would love for you to share your sense of, some of you have already done this in the homework, so feel free to sort of take and cut and paste this out if you've already done it. But who is it that you work with? Who is it that you work with? So let's get some of these on the wall, because I know it's in some of your platform pieces. Some of those have been shared as a document. We've got like 20 of them shared, I think. And I know some of you haven't shared it publicly, which is great. But I'd love to see, who do you work with? In a general sense. And then I'm going to do my best to support you in coming up with something really tangible and usable out of that. So let's just post on the wall, who do we work with? And maybe make sure you tag it with who I work with in all caps if you can. Who I work with, or who, or something, just so we can flag it. Let's just take a minute to do that. Starting to come in. This is great. Thank you, Tim Emerson and Tim Corcoran. Thank you, Kathy. Thank you, Jacoby. Thank you, Deb. Thank you, Janina. This is great. Keep them coming. All right, so yeah, Kathy, Helen, Jane, Emilio, excellent. So what I want to do is talk about, and feel free to keep posting it. Thank you, Diane again, Lorraine, Barbara, got some more. Okay, let me just give this one more minute so we can make sure everybody's focused. One more minute to post who you work with. So again, if you can tag it with sort of the who I work with in all caps right before it, it'll help us all keep track of that. And we're just who in all caps, that's great. So Lorraine, Mel, thank you. Okay, so when we look at this idea of who, or target market, we're fundamentally looking at a community of people who have a shared set of needs and experiences. So I'll repeat that. A community of people who have a shared set of needs and experiences. When I say shared set of needs and experiences, I mean, like, if you were to get them all in a room together and just invite them to talk about their life, you'd probably hear a lot of people saying, me too. Oh, I go through the same thing. because they have this shared set of needs and experiences, they also often can recognize each other in public. Interestingly, they can notice each other. They can see, like, oh, that's a hipster. That person is a, you know, punk. There's often a certain aesthetic that is shared in a community. Not always, but often. And so when we look at it in that way, that it's a community of people with a shared set of needs and experiences, we start to get really curious about what are those needs and what are those experiences. And when we're talking about who we're working with, we're talking really fundamentally about Island A. So we spoke in the beginning about the platform, container, and the paths. Then last time we drilled into just the platform piece of that. So first there were three things, and we drilled into one of those, which had six parts to it. And now we're drilling into really one part of that. And so actually one part of that, because the journey is one part of that, and the journey has three parts, the Island A and Island B, but also who's on Island A. And we're really drilling in, I guess, well, to the one part of that, Island A. Who is this on Island A, and what is their experience that would make what we do relevant? So there are three core elements that you need to have, I think, to have a really clear target market. And I'm going to invite you to look at what you just did and see if there's anything that you might add to it. So this is just a starting exercise, and we'll zoom in and out sort of throughout this to give some more context. So three elements. The first are the demographics. And the demographics are going to be things, they're the outer things. They're the things that you can tell from outside without knowing too much about the person. So they're going to be things like age, gender, ethnic background, income, their marital status, their parental status, their location, geography, where they live, the profession they work. And don't worry about this list, because I'll be sending you a link with all of this included. So that's the first thing. We need to know the outer things. And here's the thing. Sometimes age matters. Sometimes it doesn't matter at all. Sometimes gender is a thing. Sometimes people are more focused on men or women or transgender or, you know, or that. Sometimes geography matters. Sometimes it doesn't. So the point of demographics isn't that we always have to make a choice in them, but sometimes there is a preference. Sometimes there is something that shows up as a clear piece of who we work with and a bit of our focus. So that's the first thing. The second thing that we need to look at are the what's called the psychographics, and those are the internal pieces. Those are things that they value, what they're drawn to, what they find themselves talking about, what's important to them, what's meaningful. Gives us a sense of who they are inside. And the psychographics are a really important piece because marketing by demographics, you know, I could say black males ages 40 to 50 living in Seattle who make $60,000 to $70,000 a year and who are lawyers, you know. it's okay, but I don't necessarily assume that they all see things the same way, that they all value things the same way. And if we took out the lawyers piece, we've got all the rest, black males ages 40 to 50 living in Seattle, making $60,000 to $70,000 a year. That sounds so clear. And yet the challenge is, where do we find them? Just because they're black and male and that age and make that much money doesn't necessarily mean they hang out in the same spots, believe the same things. And so demographics are useful in figuring out who we're going after, but it's not everything. We also need to know the psychographics, the internal kind of stuff about people. And again, I'm going to give you a list of a lot of questions that can help. And the third piece that we need to know is the journey. What's Island A and what's Island B for them? And in this case, we really just want to focus on what's most real for them, which is often Island A. but what's their current experience? What is life like for them right now? So three things. The outer things, the demographics, the inner things, the psychographics, and the journey that they're on, the problem they have, and the result that they want. So now I want you to look back over what you wrote, and I want you to see if any of those are missing and see what you might add to help refine it. Yeah, so let's just take a couple of minutes and look back over what you did, and feel free to comment on your own piece. And then once you've done that, I'd invite you to look at two other people's and see if you can put a comment on theirs. So if you see someone's already got two comments, maybe look at somebody else's. So outer, inner, journey. So let's take a few minutes to do that. You're all doing great. I'm going to give you just a couple more minutes. This call is going to be pretty workshop focused. So you're going to be doing a lot and kind of working as we go through it. So just a couple more minutes. Okay, it looks like there are a few people who don't have any comments from other people, so maybe just give a quick scan, see if there's anyone who doesn't have any comments, and let's give them some love. I think Samia could use some, Emilio could use a comment or two. I think Deb could use a comment or two. Tim Corcoran. So who do you work with? Yeah, the Shui could use some comments. Okay, so feel free to keep perusing as we talk. So that's a good start. So for me, a lot of the outcome of this call is for you to just get a sense of where you're at now with this. I know some of you just aren't even sure at this point because you're just starting. But it's good to start to have a sense of how this is landing with people and is it clear. And so those are the three elements, the demographics, the psychographics, and the journey. But there are six criteria that I would lift up as important, and we're going to explore one of them with each other in a kind of fun way that will give you some honest and hopefully loving feedback, but give you a bit of a reality check about how clear what you're doing is coming across. So here are the six criteria. That I would have. The three elements are the demographic, psychographics, journey. Six criteria are as follows. The first is it needs to be something that's clear, that when people hear it, they get it right away. They understand immediately if they're in that group or if they're not in that group. There's no fuzziness. If I said doctors, lawyers, backpackers, vegans, Christians, Muslims, yoga students, yoga practitioners, you would immediately have a sense of who I'm talking about. And you would know if you were that, and you would know if you were not that. You would also probably get a person's face that would come to mind right away, an image in your mind of, oh, this person I know could use this. So that's what I mean by clarity. There's an immediate sense of, are they that, are they not that? Do they know somebody, don't they? The second criteria is, are there enough of them? So, and specifically, are there enough who can afford you? Because sometimes people get really passionate and they pick this target market and they say, oh, you know, my target market are these lower income teenagers, and that's awesome, and none of them can afford you, and maybe their parents can't even afford you. So then you're at this place of being a nonprofit, which is great. And I love nonprofits, and let's see more of them. But it's good to know that. It's good to know what kind of situation you're entering into. Sometimes people will have a situation where they have some of their higher income clients who pay for some of the clients who can't afford it. That's a fine model. But overall, you do need enough who can actually afford you so you can sustain yourself, whatever that means for you, whatever that amount is. So number three, can you find them? Are there hubs? So if I were to say, get me a list of all the ice cream shops in North America, you could do that. If I were to say, get me a list of all the people who like vanilla ice cream in North America, very difficult because there aren't any hubs. It's not, I don't know, there's probably some damn Facebook group with 10,000 people on it. I like vanilla ice cream group. But you get the sense. And this question of, can you find them? Are there hubs? Which we'll get into when we talk about the paths in much more detail. This question is often a make or break question around a niche. If I can't figure out any hubs, you can't figure out any hubs, and nobody we talk to can figure out any hubs, it probably means there aren't any. So it's either a very clear group with no hubs, which is unusual because it's a community of people with a shared set of needs and experiences, and they often create their own hubs at some point. So it's either a clear group with no hubs, meaning it's probably a very new thing, or it's a it's not that clear. And so there aren't hubs because it's not a group. It's, I just work with people who are stressed. And of course, that's so broad, there aren't many hubs for that. So first one, is it clear? Second, are there enough? Third, are there hubs? Fourth, do they share your point of view? It's very hard to work with people who have the opposite point of view to you. I've been joking at workshops. You know, it's like if you were a fundamentalist Christian and you went to some, I don't know, pagan healing thing, and somehow you didn't realize what it was, and you walked in and you saw horned gods all over the wall, and I don't know, they asked for a blood sacrifice when you came. You know, just you'd be appalled and you'd run away. But similarly, if you were a pagan and you walked into a Christian place and you saw crosses everywhere and Bibles, it just wouldn't fit your worldview. If you were a hardcore raw vegan and you went to see a naturopath, and it turned out, and you assumed this naturopath would be into a raw vegan diet, but they're all into primal diet and eating raw animal products, it just wouldn't fit. So fundamentally, whatever your point of view is, whatever you started to articulate and describe in your platform piece, they need to basically be on the same page. They need to probably be in agreement with you about the point of view so that they're like, oh my gosh, this person sees things the way that I do. Number five, they need to be aligned with your why. Whatever the why is of why you do this, it should be something when they hear, they also get excited. And sixth, that you love these people. So to recap, it should be clear. There should be enough of them who can afford you. Should be able to find them. They should be aligned with your point of view or agree with it. Definitely aligned with your why. And these are people that you should really love and care about. So I tend to filter any target market I look at through those three or through those six things. So what I'm going to invite you to do now is we're going to take 5 or more minutes, but I want you to read through people's descriptions. And I want you to give them a number. From 0 to 10. 0 is like, I have no idea who this is. I can't even begin to imagine. And a 10 is, this is so crystal clear for me. I know precisely who this is. I can think of somebody. Somebody's face came to mind, or I'm just clear that I don't know anybody like that, and I'm not that. But it's extremely clear. There's no fuzziness. So 0 is totally fuzzy. I have no idea. 10 is crystal clear. So I'm going to invite you to look at as many of them as you can. Let's take about 5 minutes, and I want you to rate. And let's see who gets the highest rating, who gets the lowest rating, and we'll explore why that is. Yeah. So let's take 5 minutes right now. Oh, and just if it isn't clear, of course, you're going to put that number in the comment box below. Thank you, Helen. You totally got it. Yes, you'll put it in below. And don't worry if you're feeling like, oh, I know mine's not clear or you don't feel ready. It's totally fine. But doing this is going to help us give some examples of ones that are really clear. And what's not clear. And then we can know also who needs the most help and who could use some support. So if you're feeling a little antsy about this, it's okay. You're in good hands. That's why you're here. So yeah, keep going. You're doing great. And I'm noticing some of you are brilliantly posting little bits about what else you'd like to see that would help it be a 10 for you. So Tim Corcoran gave Mel 7 and said, more point of view and why. So that's really great. So if there's something that pops out as you is like, you know what I'm craving to hear more of is about this, that would help me understand who it was. So we'll take just two more minutes. So get as many of them as you can. This is such awesome feedback you're giving each other, by the way. Thank you for being willing to be so honest in it. This is really useful for everyone who's getting it. But one more minute. Isn't it so funny how easy it is to see this in other people's stuff, but how hard it is to do it for ourselves? Yeah, you guys are being great. Let's take one more minute. All right, so let's keep going. This is so great, everybody. So I suggest you look at your own and see sort of what the average rating was. And there are a lot of lessons to take from this. but here's something I want to lift up, is that there are two different pieces we need to consider when we're looking at a target market or who we're reaching. And I want to lift that up as I call it big circle, little circle. And I'll send you a blog post with this that has a video with funny jokes at the end that you can watch that gives a pretty good description of this. But basically, when I think of the big circle, I think of this as the criteria for anyone I would ever work with. When I think of the little circles, if you think of it like there's a big circle with three circles inside it, like a Venn diagram kind of together, the little circles are the particular subgroups that I might focus on. So for myself, big circle might be conscious entrepreneurs. Subgroups could be like holistic practitioners, permaculture providers, green service providers, that type of thing. So you've got the big circle and the little circles. And when a lot of people talk about target markets, I think what they're saying is the big circle, often. The big circle will be a few things. One, it's going to be, you'll hear a lot of people say, well, I want to work with people. I think I saw an example written there. It's like people who are ready to do the work, people who are ready to change, people who are willing. And I'd say that's actually a very important thing to know, that that's what you want as a big circle piece, because that's going to be true of anybody you work with, if that makes sense. So things that, you know, people were stressed, they're going through transition, likely a big circle thing, that they show up on time, they pay you on time, they refer business, big circle. And here's an exercise that I would suggest you do for homework. This is especially useful if you've been in business a while, if you're new, a little trickier, but you can still think about it. The exercise is this. I want you to make a list of your top 10 clients who you've loved, and the top 10 clients who've really drained your energy. So the top 10 clients that you're just like, God, if all of my clients were like this client, I'd be just ecstatic. I'd be so happy. And 10 that's like, God, if all of my clients were like this, I'd go out of business. I would stop. It would just be too stressful and draining. So you make a list and then literally go through name by name. And this is something you can do by yourself, but it's also useful to get a partner to ask you these questions sort of interview style so you can really talk. And this is where the marketing buddy, I suggest also, whether that's somebody in this group or somebody else, but there are so many brilliant people, so feel free to send each other messages on Facebook, set up a call. but whether you do this by yourself or with others, you go name by name. So with the list of the clients that you love, you think, what is it I loved about John Smith? And just keep writing, keep talking until you're done, until there's nothing else to say. Then, what is it you loved about Jane Smith? And talk and talk and talk until you're done. And similarly with the other list. At the end of that, you will have a very clear real-world sense of what's most important to you in a client, the qualities, the values that you would want in clients. So that exercise will take you pretty far in terms of the big circle. The little circles are where things get really interesting, because the big circle, you know, if I said conscious entrepreneurs who are ready to really handle their marketing and all that, you know, show up on time at workshops and do homework in between sessions, that's good, but it doesn't necessarily help me find them. Yeah, so if we look at the six criteria, that's clear, there are enough who can afford to pay you, there are hubs, the point of view, why, and that I love them. The thing where the big circle falls down is on the clarity piece. And because it's unclear, it's hard to know if there are enough. It's also because it's so fuzzy and unclear, we don't know if there are hubs. It's easier for me to find hubs for, let's say, holistic practitioners or specifically massage therapists. That's very easy to find hubs for. Massage schools, magazines, newsletters, blogs, events. But conscious entrepreneurs is pretty vague. So the big circle, sometimes we have a name like conscious entrepreneurs, people in chronic pain, cultural creatives, and all that. And those are diagnostic terms. But those diagnostic terms, it's like a label that we put on them, and it's useful for us, but it's quite honestly not that useful in the marketing, because very few people, even with chronic pain, wake up in the morning thinking, boy, I have chronic pain. What they think is my joints always ache. I always have this headache, stomach ache, never goes away. Does that make sense? You know, they don't connect or associate directly to the label that we give, but rather to their own symptoms. So conscious entrepreneurs, nobody wakes up in the morning and say, boy, I'm so excited to be a conscious entrepreneur. Cultural creatives, unless you've read Paul Ray's book or been to a talk about it or heard it, not that useful. You know, Paul Hawken just wrote a book called Blessed Unrest. So if you said, oh, my big circle is people who are really involved in the Blessed Unrest, that doesn't even make any sense to you unless you've read the book. So it's useful for us, and I wouldn't get rid of it, because I think it's good for us to have a shorthand. You know, I say I work with hippies, but it's funny. I just went down to Black Diamond, Alberta, and there's some people like, I'm not going to the workshop because it's for hippies and I'm not a hippie. So, you know, nothing's perfect. And it's a useful thing for us, not so much for the marketing. So I hope that makes sense. So the little circles are where all the criteria can start to show up and where things get a lot clearer. one of the challenges that happens with this idea of who do we work with is there's often a lot of fear of niching. There's a lot of fear of focusing, which is understandable because you probably love the variety. You love working with so many different kinds of people. And if you pick just one group, then you're going to lose out on everyone else who's not a client, which is why I want to suggest having three little circles that are your primary focus, meaning that about 80% of your focus goes towards three little circles, three sort of subgroups, if you will. So in my case, holistic practitioners, permaculture providers, green service providers. So you have your big circle and you get as clear as you can. That's kind of the lens that you look at all your clients through. And then you've got three little circles. And each of those little circles gives you a lot to work with. Much easier to find hubs for a little circle. The point of view and the why, by the way, are probably big circle things. So particular things might show up for a small circle, but that's probably going to be a big circle. But once we have a particular little circle, then we can start to explore more. And I say three because I find when people try to think of one, they freak out because it's like, oh, the loss of freedom, and now I'm going to have to give up everything else. So I do want to talk about this a little bit, this fear of losing out. What we're really talking about here is trying to find people who are a perfect fit for you. The ones that are just, you're going to love them. They're the people you're best able to help, you're most qualified to help. These are your people, the people where it just feels so wonderful and where they're so happy to pay you. And part of getting there is with this notion of the perfect fit. And remember, when we rewind to the first class, when we talked about collapsing and posturing, we talked about composure, and that composure was all about the commitment to the truth of, is it a fit? And so this is where we really start to clarify, what does that mean for us that it's a fit? When I say those three little circles, I don't mean that we're committing to them. They're things you can experiment with. So a few thoughts. First of all, you can be explicit without being exclusive. You can be explicit without being exclusive, meaning you might even say, I'm just going to take this one little circle and just focus everything on that. I'm just going to focus on permaculture providers. You will still get other clients. So just at my workshop in Black Diamond this weekend, there's a woman there who's a mortgage broker. She's not green. She's not holistic. And yet she was like, I was so drawn to your work anyways. This happens all the time. When you have a really clear platform, even if you're so explicit about who you work with, you don't have to be exclusive. Other people will show up, and you're welcome to take them. So when we talk about the fit, I've just been thinking about this notion of sort of the white hot center lately. It's like the bullseye, the center of the target, the white hot center where it's like these are the people who are 100% perfect for you. And it's almost like this is a terrible metaphor, so please feel free to help me find a better metaphor. It's almost like a black hole. You know, it's like that thing in the center that sucks everything in. And you don't have to be exactly in it to be drawn to it. That's a terrible destructive, but maybe it takes them to an alternative universe or something. So my point is that if you can define what that center is, it's all, maybe like it radiates out and it draws people in. Even if they're not exactly perfect, they still might be drawn in, and you can decide whether you're going to accept them or not. So we can be explicit without being exclusive. These things can also be phased in, probably should be phased in, not dropped in directly and immediately. You have to change all your marketing materials, et cetera. And there's also this notion that's like, oh, well, if I focus on something, I'm losing others. And I want to share the uncomfortable truth that you are already losing people. You're already losing people. There are some people who are just naturally drawn to you and others who aren't because of your platform. With whatever level of clarity at that right now, one of those six levels, people are already drawn to it or repelled by it, period. So the idea that you're going to suddenly stop losing people or start losing people is a myth. It's already happening. The only question is, are you drawing and attracting the people you really want, and are you repelling the people you don't want as clients in the first place? That's already, a dynamic. And when we have a little circle, one of the ideas that I'm going to be putting out for you to fiddle with and we'll be exploring more in the future calls, is the idea of a niche project. A niche project. The idea is that you would take one of your little circles, one of the ones that you're most excited about, that you feel the most energy around, and come up with a particular project around it. So that could be a workshop, it could be a teleclass, it could be that you're going to do a series of coaching sessions just for that group. But it's somewhere where you can focus because hands down, trying to offer something, you know, like, oh, I'm putting on a workshop for the Succeeding at Life 101 workshop is not going to get as many people coming to it as the how to create a website as a holistic practitioner workshop. There's so much more draw when it's specific, when it's based on a particular journey for a particular group of people. There's immediately more relevance and also more credibility in it. I see people all the time struggling to fill workshops, and the challenge is usually that the workshop title and focus is so generic. You are probably losing clients because you're so generic for some of you. That happens. People look and they say, well, this one person offers me exactly what I want. This other person seems to do a bit of everything, so I think I'll go to the person who's offering me exactly what I want. So part of where we're going here, the direction, is to help you refine the big circle, to get that as clear as you can, to pick three little circles, and then to start thinking of project, picking one of those little circles, and to start picking projects for those. You know, there's yeah, so let me pause there, and I'd love to just hear any reflections or questions that you have at this point on that. So where are you at? Let's take 2 or 3 minutes to write some questions, and I'll start responding. This is great. Let's take one more minute, get any questions that you have out. All right, let's dive into these. Awesome questions, everybody. I hope this is useful so far. Okay, so Tim Emerson said, I'm thinking of who might be little circles who pay. That's a problem. I live in a rural area, universally aware people tend toward the hippie description. Maybe there are hubs of groups that would be interested that I'm just not aware of or who travel in. I'm totally stuck here. I feel you, Tim. That's hard. Yeah. So part of the question is geography. I'm wondering if there's a potential for you to do some stuff virtually that could reach people out of your geography. One of the laws of niching I've sort of come up with is the inverse law of geography, is what I call it. And so the inverse law of geography says that the broader your geographic reach is, like if you're saying, oh, I could work with anybody anywhere on the planet. The broader that is, the narrower your niche can afford to be. But the narrower your geographic reach is, you just live in a village with 10 people. Well, you kind of just have to be a jack of all trades for everything. You only have 10 people, so you can't afford to niche too narrowly. So I think that's part of the dynamic, is that one might inherently have to be broad, and one might be able to afford to be able to be broad in a smaller area. There's a woman in Orangeville, Ontario, and she's the only yoga teacher in Orangeville, and her classes do fine because she's the only yoga teacher. So sometimes there is something just about the population. And could they pay? Could you travel out certain days of the week or the month to go to other places where they would pay? That's a really excellent question. Yeah, I'm not sure I have any particular wisdom except to honor the struggle of that. But to also be thinking, sometimes we want to think, who does live here? Who are these people? And that might become a little circle, just like who are these people? Or if we had to break it down, who are they? And then how could I come up with something tailored just for them that they would really resonate with, that would be particularly relevant to those people? So that's something. Lorraine, okay, so for starting out without a large base yet, what do you recommend for identifying smaller circles? So I saw that question come up a lot. How do I pick the smaller circles? Boy, this is the trickiest thing. Let me give you a bunch of options. I'm going to send you also after this a bunch of exercises that might help you whittle down to that. Exercise number one, look at your existing client base. Look at who you have. I know, Lorraine, it sounds like you don't have a large base right now, but even so, look at who you've got, who's already coming to you, because there's probably a reason that there are certain people who keep coming back, and there may be something there. I often invite clients to look at their client base and divide it into three groups. Like if you had to divide it into three groups, the ones that pop out the most, what would they be? You might also just ask yourself, who is it that you are super excited to work with? Maybe there's just a group you're like, God, I've been thinking of working with crafters or actors. I've been thinking of doing something for permaculture folks. So for me, I got introduced to permaculture a couple of years ago, 3 years ago or something, and it blew my mind. I was so inspired by it. I saw this video some of you may be familiar with called Greening the Desert. If you haven't seen it, go see it. It's on YouTube, 5 minutes long. And I got really excited, but it took me a few years to be like, oh, maybe I should focus on that as a target market, working with permaculture practitioners. When I started doing the marketing workshops years ago, they were just kind of for conscious greed, holistic, whatever kind of businesses. And I noticed that half the people who came were holistic practitioners. Half of them. And I was like, wow, maybe I should have a workshop just for holistic practitioners. So part of it is noticing who's already coming, noticing where our interest is. Maybe there's just a topic or something that you're really fascinated by these days, and that could be a chance to explore doing a particular project. And I know that question of what is a niche project, what examples might there be? There are like 29 I can think of. And so don't worry, I'll give you a list of those. I'm creating slowly my workbook, the sort of Niching for Hippies workbook, and it's going to be like 150 pages. I'll definitely let you all know about it when it comes out, but I'm going to give you a bunch of stuff that I've been working on in there that nobody else has seen. Hooray! I think it'll be pretty useful. So there's that. How else can you come up with the small circles? Oh, yeah, one of the biggest ways is, I can't remember if I've spoken to this before, but this idea that your deepest wound is likely one of your truest niches. Your deepest wounds are often the doorway to your truest niches. The things that you've struggled with, that you've gone through personally, are often the things that you are most qualified and best able to help other people with. This seems to happen again and again. I was just doing a workshop called The Hot Box in Calgary yesterday, and there was a woman there named Lee, and she had struggled with depression and anxiety for years, and three attempts on her life, and now she's starting a nonprofit, and she's so passionate about supporting people with depression and anxiety. So sometimes it's really direct like that, sometimes it's not so direct. But to look at where you struggle, and again, I'll put up a document in this Facebook group with a list of all of those things, some of the stories and examples. That's probably the best place. Often people are shocked with it. I hear this again and again at workshops. People say, oh, my target market is people just like me, people who've struggled in the same way, but they're just a few steps behind. So there's often that. Deborah Epstein said, just want to agree with the concept that it's so important to narrow the focus and not think everyone is your ideal client. There are definitely people who invigorate me and people who drain me. I'm not interested in working with the drainers. There must be somebody else out there who resonates with them. It doesn't have to be me. And when I'm drained, I'm not able to do my best work with others. It's not a service to the broader good to say everyone is your ideal client. And there are absolutely enough people out there who are in my love pile, as I call them. I know it's just about us finding each other. Deborah, you could write this book yourself. Brilliant. Yeah, it's very true. And like Yanina, I love this. I like the love pile concept. Very nice. So yeah, and this is true. You know, some people, I know someone who went through depression, and the thought of working with other people who have depression is appalling. She's just like, I can't go back. I can't deal with it. It's too draining. Whereas other people are so drawn to working with people who are depressed. Some people, yeah, it's wild. The people that I would just like be, I'd never want to work with, that I find annoying or frustrating, other people are really drawn to. So yes, I would resonate with that. Loshui said, I know a couple really insanely profitable entrepreneurs, for example, Steve Pavlina's Personal Development for Smart People. I've thought of just marketing to the same people with different product. Cool. And again, my sense is that the smart people, again, is the big circle. Yeah. It's what is probably, I'm loosely familiar with Steve Pavlina stuff. It's a point of view he has. That is what people, it's a point of view and it's a why that people are really resonating and being drawn to. This idea of like people not spending all this money on personal growth, being taken advantage of. There's a real cause there, and he's got a real particular perspective and take on all of that, yeah, on the personal growth world. So I'd say the smart people is a big circle, and I would still be curious if you had to break that big circle down into subgroups, what would it be? You know, conscious entrepreneurs, how do I break this down into smaller groups? I'd be curious with the smart people because, again, you're going to get more traction with a small group. And sometimes that's where we need to start is we pick one group and we really focus on that for a while. And it's really not marriage. It's not a lifetime commitment. It's good to think about Bill Barron, one of my colleagues, talks about niching as like dating. You're kind of dating your niche. You don't have to marry it. It's probably too much. You might freak your niche out. Or worse, they might say yes, and then expensive divorce, terrible. Who keeps the kids? But you can date your niche. You can kind of say, okay, let's do a project. Let's try something small and see if I like it. Because sometimes just thinking it through even is really helpful. I had a friend who wanted to be wanted to do yoga for kids, and because she taught one class a week, she thought that would be great. And then she's like, oh, maybe that could be my niche. And again, notice though, when people say my niche, it's like as if it has to be one. It doesn't just have to be one. I think it was good to have a clear single big circle, but you can have a number of small circles. I probably wouldn't have more than three just because it's overwhelming. But anyway, she was like, yoga, teaching kids yoga, that'd be great. Then the next day she called me. She's like, I totally don't want to do that because I know I'd snap at a certain point. I can do it once a week, but if I had to do it every day, I'd just be like, do you want to see your face on a milk carton, you little urchin? So she couldn't do it. Samia says one group of mine is VCs, venture capitalists, but they always come through referrals from their friends. So I don't know how to create a project with them. Maybe I could put together a cleanse designed for their particular lifestyle. Interesting. Maybe. I don't know if that jumps out at me as like a particular, like a cleanse for VCs. It doesn't seem like a totally natural, authentic fit or connection there. Unless I'm not understanding their lifestyle. There may be something about it. but yes, almost always word of mouth is how things are going to, you know, spread. So venture capitalist. So what kind of project could you come up with? I have some other ideas which may come up when we talk about paths. Mel said, I love doing the listing of my 10 worst clients because it helped me decide that there was a group in my niche that I didn't want to work with. Very empowering to refer out to someone more suited so that I could love my clients. Yes, this is so good. This is obviously true on a personal level in our lives. There are some people that just, for whatever reason, we're not a fit. It's like in permaculture, gardening. There's some plants that grow really well together and some plants that don't. Some plants actually hurt each other. And it's nothing wrong with the plants. They just grow better in different combinations. And if we're spending all of our time trying to survive with these plants that are trying to kill us next to us because they're just being themselves, we have less energy for the people that we do love in our lives, some people for whom it is a fit. And that's the same with our client base. Absolutely. So it's okay to fire clients. It's okay to let go of clients that aren't a fit, for sure. Paolo asked, do you need market research to choose little circles? We can be drawn into a losing niche. Yes, that's very true. I know nothing about market research. I wish I did. But if you use those six criteria, it's really helpful. You can do a Google keyword search where you can see how many people are actually searching for certain terms, which can help you, which I know almost nothing about. But market research, probably thinking it through, asking people about it, definitely. Seeing, are there hubs? Are there places these people hang out? How many of them do there seem to be? I would definitely do that before you invest a lot of energy into a particular small circle. Deborah said, I appreciate you naming the fears. As you were speaking them, I felt so clearly how I have known all along what inner circle to be communicating with explicitly, yet have been scared to do so as others might be alienated. Thanks for exposing the myth. Yeah, it's people are just going to be turned off and turned on by different things. And again, in business, I think there's this way that we mute ourselves. We try to, become like unoffensive to anybody. So we don't actually ever be ourselves. We never share our real point of view. We don't speak with passion about the causes that are the very things that would have people resonate with us so strongly. But we just try to kind of mute ourselves because we don't want to be offensive. We don't want to take up space, which is a form of collapsing, I think. When we just, I don't want to take up space. I'll just, be here. Yeah. Emilio, does the niche project involve client participation or can it be something I research, build, report on? I'm building an indoor sprout garden. Should I involve my clients in that project or does documenting the project serve here? That's a really good question. I am a big fan of involving the niche in designing things because they tell you so much smart stuff. I think you can do both, but I had a business when I was just out of high school doing workshops for student councils and peer support teams. And this was before email, before Facebook. I just wrote a bumper sticker and it said, when I'm a grandfather, I will tell my grandchildren that I'm older than the internet and blow their minds. So I had to call and fax the how archaic, you know. And so, but I would talk to these student council advisors on the phone. I just spent days doing this. And I would always ask the same three questions. I'd say, how's it going? What's going great with your student council right now? And that was nice. I always got them in a good mood and there was always something to be proud of. And I'd learn about cool projects that students were doing that I could even teach in my workshop. So I learned. Number two, I was like, what's the biggest challenge right now? What's hardest? And I would hear the same things again and again. It was almost always apathy, not enough sense of team. And these poor student council advisors, they were the phys ed teacher 1 year and they just got thrown into this job and they had no training, which actually had me eventually develop a program specifically for the student council advisors, not just for the students. But so I would hear the same problems again and again, and they basically wrote my marketing material. because they told me what their challenges were. And then I said, third, so if you were going to design a student council workshop that would be like perfect for your particular student council, given where you're at and your particular needs, what would it need to do? What would you want to see in it? And they designed my program. And eventually I would call them and ask these questions. And my program, like, I just kept hearing the same things again and again, because a niche is a community of people with a shared set of needs and experiences. A niche is a community of people with a shared set of needs and experiences. These student councils, advisors, were a community. And what's interesting is there actually weren't many hubs for them. And yet they still had this shared set of needs and experiences because they were all going through the same kind of thing. And so, of course, you know, when I listened to enough of them, I was able to design something that really worked. So I'm a huge fan of those kinds of conversations. One of my colleagues who really lifted my mind sort of opened my mind to this idea of word of mouth marketing and hubs and niche. Dominic Canterbury, who doesn't really do marketing anymore, lives in Seattle. Lovely fellow. He would do this thing where he would pick a target market. He and his clients would pick a target market that would fit this kind of criteria we were talking about, and they would design an offer, kind of the boat, for whoever it was on Island A. And then they would sit down. They'd go for coffee with one of those people. They'd sit down, and they'd show, they'd write it out and give it to them. And if the response they got was like, wow, that's neat, meh, wrong. If the response was like, oh, that's very interesting, good job. You know, the response they wanted was, wow, oh, my God, hell yes, where's this been all my life? You know, that kind of response. And you can't design a boat that gets that kind of response when it's going to everybody. It's just impossible. Helen said, I am understanding how so important this clarity issue is, and actually making myself look at what I want for myself and my clients. Yes, yes. Why not be happy and have great clients? Mel said, would a workshop on weight loss and workshop on stress management, still focused at my niche, but different aspects of their symptoms, be what you mean? That's a great example. Yeah, sometimes it's for the same basic group of people, but for different symptoms, different problems that they have. Yeah, absolutely. That's perfect. You're a genius. Samia, how do we decide on the small circles we talked about? Yanina, your perfect center, hot center, is like the liquid magnetic core of a planet. Your center has a gravitational pull that holds the perfect business environment together. Nice. Excellent. Okay, let me just refresh and see if there's any are there any other questions that have shown up. All right. Are there any other questions that have come up? Let me. Tim, thanks for posting the Greening the Desert video. After this call, seriously, watch this video that Tim just posted. Incredible. Yeah, so any other questions? Let's just pause for a moment and see if anyone's got anything else they want to add or query. Am I so clear? No questions? I'm a genius. Any other questions? All right, a few more questions coming up. Oh, we need a joke, says Lorraine. And Helen says, I'm that good, so there. A joke. Do you know how many Grateful Dead fans it takes to change a light bulb? None. They just let it burn out, followed around for 20 years. Heyo! Do you know why Grateful Dead fans never play musical chairs? The music never stops. These jokes are gold. We'll use them later today. Wow. So Tim just says, I'm just not sure how to proceed. I hear you, Tim. if I have a brainstorm, I will let you know. All right. So Let me give you a sense of where this is going, and if any questions come up, please put them on the wall. And then I'll open up the call to see if there's anyone who's not a part of the group who's just on the phone. So where this is going is we clarify the big circle. We make our best guess at the little circles, and then we are going to pick one of those little circles and come up with a project for it as we move forward, something we can fiddle with and experiment with and get immediate feedback on that's not committing our whole business. Oh, and let me share this. This is probably one of the bigger thoughts I've had about niche market. You guys are going to get so many notes to check out. Seriously. So I've been referring this to as sort of the yin-yang of niching. And see how this lands for you. Two ways of niching. The yang way, the directed way where you – at the worst extreme of it, it's contrived. You literally just pick an abstract target market because you're like, well, there's an underserved community I don't particularly care about, but I'm going to, in a very contrived marketing-esque kind of way, exploit that target market, if that makes sense. So you it's very explicit. You know who that target market is, and you go after it. And it's just kind of, at the worst extreme, it's just this capitalist kind of gross approach. The other way is sort of this more implicit marketing. And the implicit marketing is where you, it's more this yin where you go inside and you come up with something and you really sit with it and then you offer it out to the world. At that worst extreme, that's like the struggling, starving artists that create this incredible art and nobody knows about it till they die. You know, the Van Goghs of the world. And I want to suggest there's a sort of happy medium, and maybe it's more like a spiral in some way, or like a third option. But it's that you go inside and you really think, what is it that I want to offer the world? And then you share that with the world. And you notice who responds to it. And those can become little circles, and then you go back out. So, because this is important, some people will say, oh, I've got this new line of jewelry, and it's going to be so awesome with the teenagers. Teenagers are going to love it. But then the teenagers don't, but middle-aged people or grandmothers love it. And it's just like you wouldn't have called it. You wouldn't have thought that at all, and yet that's what's so. So a lot of this is paying attention to who's really already responding to what we're doing. And then if you know, because it's like you could, if you thought it was for teenagers, but the grandmothers love it, you might be in all the wrong craft shows. There's a woman I know, and sometimes it's a funny geographical thing. This woman in Toronto, she was struggling with her work in Toronto, and she went out to this small town and was swamped, and who knows why. So some of it is just paying attention to where is the response. And then you can even craft something more clearly and fully for that group and explore that even more. And, you know, go back. Sit with it because it'll also change. This is part of the challenge with niching. It's going to change over time. Okay, so Lucia said, what if you think that the niche that needs my service most is not the one more in line with my vision, but I still like to work for them because my help has bigger effects? I think I'd need to know a bit more about the situation, Lucia, so maybe if you could type a bit more to help me understand the nature of the situation. Yeah, Lashvisa, we can't focus too much on what people can pay, etc. After all, the economy is in a very weird state. People might be paying in chickens and back massages for all we know. Could be. But to me, this is it lifts up a question. I'll post this on the wall. Some of you might get a kick out of this. I'm doing a workshop that's called in the Bay Area, San Francisco, coming up March 10th that weekend. And it's called Fuck Money. And it's all about sort of looking at different economic models of how to sustain ourselves. But I get that's kind of a joke in some ways. But it is the point of this is that money is not a need. We don't need money. We don't need jobs. We need food, shelter, whatever the things are that we actually need, clothing. So to me, the important thing is, are your needs getting met? Collapsing is like, oh, my needs don't matter. Posturing is, well, I don't care about other people's needs. Composure, can we both get our needs met in a way that genuinely feels good? So, yeah. All right. Any other comments, questions? Yes. Yeah, that is a catchy name for a workshop. I agree. Okay. So let me, while you all are thinking, if you have any amazing, brilliant, last-minute questions, I'm just going to open the lines. So this is going to open it, so we'll hear some background noise. If you have any background noise, maybe cover your headset or mute yourself on your phone if you've got that. And if there are any questions, I'll just open it for 30 seconds, and we'll see. All right, one sec. Hey, everybody. Is there anyone with any questions who's not a part of the Facebook group? Anyone with any questions who's not in the Facebook group? I think we might just have everyone in the Facebook group at this point. Okay, nobody. All right, one sec. Well, that was easy. Okay, I just want to see if there's anything else I want to add here. Boy, I think I've talked about most of the stuff. Okay, so let's go over the homework for next time to make sure it's clear, and then you can ask me questions about it. So I'm going to send you a bunch of – oh, wait, sorry. I've got something from Lucia here. So most ladies that need my service are corporate, not very interested in clothes and femininity. The ones I like are the ones that already care for themselves but want to achieve the next level. Boy, that's a really great question. yeah, this is where it gets down to choices because, you know, for some people, they work a job and the business is a side thing. And that's okay, and that really works for them. Some people have a target market they're not as passionate about, but again, that funds them to do the work with the ones that they're most passionate about. And so what I'd be curious with the ladies, so most ladies that need your services are corporate, and they're not very interested in clothes and femininity. I'd be curious what they are interested in, and if the case could be made that this clothes and femininity could actually help them get that thing that they're already craving that they want. Like, are they wanting more success? Are they wanting more stability? Are they? I'm curious what it is that they're craving and if a connection can be drawn there. The ones that I like are already the ones that take care of themselves, but they want to achieve the next level. So I'm getting the sense that maybe these corporate ones don't take care of themselves. Is that true? So they want money, power, confidence. I'm seeing a good chance to get in here with these women and also slowly convert them and help them let go of the hunger for money, power, and confidence. But again, it's an interesting thing. Like, let's say these women want money, power, and confidence. What they're really wanting maybe is to, you know, of course, something deeper than that. If we try to lead with our diagnosis of what we think they need, or Island C even, sometimes it just doesn't grab people. And some, like, there's a woman I know, Jessica O'Reilly, and she does these sex workshops. She's a sexologist, you know, best job ever. And she has a workshop called Blow His Mind and one called Blow Her Mind. And it's all about sort of the sexual techniques and tactics. And she gets a way bigger crowd than people who do Tantra workshops. yeah. And so sometimes we just have to offer people the thing that they actually think they need, which is aligned with their point of view. And once they're there and we have a relationship, we can be educating them that there's more. So do they have a conflict with seeing money, power, and confidence as related to femininity? Can they dress well without having to attach feminine? Yeah, I guess I'm just wondering if you can, Lucy, if you can go to them and say, look, I'm going to help you dress in a way that's going to help you make more money, be more powerful, and feel more confident. And I'm wondering if part of the educational process that you could help them go through is seeing how taking care of themselves and honoring their femininity is a part of that process and could actually help them be more powerful, feel more confident, and potentially make more money, or even compel them to get to a point where they realize, oh, I don't, that money isn't actually what I really want in the first place, you know, or certain amounts are, you know, I can live within my means and that actually feels better, that maybe they really want happiness. I don't know. But I'd be curious about the kind of journey that you could be taking people on. yeah. So, see if there are any other questions that come up. Okay, so the homework. So first of all, Piece number one is the big circle. Define the big circle as well as you can. And again, I'll send you a video with a link on this. Think of your top 10 best clients, worst clients. Just think generally, what do I want in clients? Define that with as much clarity as you can. Then make your best guess at three little circles to fiddle with. Again, you're dating these little circles. You're not committing. How exciting. You've got three on the go at the same time. So date three little circles and just figure out your best guess. Again, these might change next week. That's okay. But take a guess. And then I want you to pick one of those little circles, and I want you to define it as clearly as possible. And I want you to do a write-up of that little circle with the demographics, the psychographics, and the journey defined. And you can do it in between now and next week. We'll probably start off the call next week with some of those. But I would invite you to put it into the group for review and ask people to give you a grade. And I'd invite you to start that with the words, grade me, colon, all caps, on the little circle. So a little circle, invite people to grade you, zero to 10, and what would it take for this to be a 10? What are you craving to know? Once we have that little circle, we're going to fiddle with that in the next call, even though it's not your whole everybody you're trying to reach. It's not the end all and be all. When we get to the container and when we get to the paths, I just think it'll help it make more sense if we're fiddling with something specific, even though it's not everyone you're ever going to reach. So I hope that feels okay and makes sense for you. We're going to be looking at sort of with the container. We'll look at the container as a whole, but also the container is a particular project that you might be able to offer that would work well with that group. What else do I want to say? Yeah, so that's the direction. That's where we're going. Any last questions before we wrap up? Okay, Lucia is saying, so which one should be my little circle? I would say women in the corporate world, I'd say there are two little circles. There's the one that sounds like they're already into this sort of femininity, taking care of themselves. That's loosely defined, but it's a little circle. And then there are the corporate ones who want the money, power, and confidence. And that could be another little circle. So again, you can have three, you can have multiple ones, and they're going to overlap with each other a bit. But I might keep defining each of those. And what are the differences between them? What do they have in common? You would pick one of those to focus on the next one. All right. Any other questions? You all are great. Okay. So I imagine part of the reason there aren't any questions is because this is such a big topic. There's so much to consider. There's so much to go into, and it's just hard to choose. And some of this is just gets down to the work of really sitting and thinking and talking with a lot of people about it. Part of the thing I like about this idea of niche projects is it, for me at least, takes some of the pressure away, because I think we do fear like, I don't want to get married to this niche and then have to go through the divorce and then pick another one and the drama of that. So picking a niche project, I'm lifting up as a way to just take the pressure out of it, take all the expectation out of it in terms of it being everything and giving us something that we can just fiddle with. And in fiddling with it, we also start to apply the mindset and learn a process. Emilio, thank you. So, okay, Tim said, I run both youth and adult programs. And of course, for my youth programs, it is the kids' parents who are my customers. Very true. He goes on to say, for the course of this week's homework, and for that matter, for this whole course, should I treat them as two separate activities? Yeah, I would actually for next week. I would decide, do you want to focus on the youth program or for the adult programs? I think it's part of the reason I'm asking you to do this is it's just going to help make it it's like the help me help you. It's going to make it easier for me to help, but it's also going to make it easier for everyone else to understand what you're up to and therefore be able to give you resources and ideas. Because when we start talking about paths, one of the major things we're going to talk about is hubs and how do people find you. And we'll do probably a little brainstorm where people will come up with it. And if you put your big circle there, and you say, oh, I work with people who are stressed, who pay on time and all this, nobody will be able to help. So I would, for the sake of this, pick one, knowing that you'll just do the same exercise for each of them. And this is an important piece, why I recommend no more than three little circles, because the questions we're going to do, and by the way, I'm going to give you a ton of questions for this little circle, and you have to do that for each little circle, ultimately, you know, or there's the possibility of doing that. So if you had 20, it's overwhelming. So I'm going to send you a list of questions that I think you're going to find super fun. I would definitely recommend doing this with a marketing buddy and having them ask you questions and take notes for you. Somebody in this group, a friend of yours, you probably want to spend an hour and a half on this to really dig into it. But there are a bunch of questions about demographics, a bunch about psychographics, and a bunch about the journey too, that are going to dig deeper and deeper. And if you try to do it for the big circle, it just won't be quite as juicy as it will be for one of the little circles. So I'll write this all out. I'll probably send out the homework specifically a little bit later tonight, because I've got a run to do it, a consultation with a gardening center and a holistic spa in Edmonton. I'm very excited. So let's just see if there are any other questions. So Caroline said, this is interesting to me. I'm feeling a lot of resistance to limiting my target audience to certain groups. What about just being open to what comes my way, law of attraction and all that? I would say it's great. And to me, the law of attraction, right? Lushvi beats me to it. It says the law of attraction requires specificity and clarity in action. I don't think it's a dichotomy. I think you can be noticed what's coming your way and be open to that, but then you still notice, like, oh, I'm attracting a lot of these people. Oh, I seem to be getting a lot of vegetarian moms. What do you know? Oh, maybe I should have a niche project for vegetarian moms. Like, I noticed I was really open when I started, so I'd say it's a good idea, but just also be watchful, you know, of who's showing up. And I started, it was open to everyone, and then all these holistic practitioners were coming. And so I came up with something for them. And I got to tell you, filling up the workshops for holistic practitioners is way easier than filling up a workshop for conscious entrepreneurs in general. So this is also, I think, lifts up, we have a funny relationship to limits in this culture, that we see limits as something that confine us instead of something that define us. We see it's like that the goal is freedom, and the only way to have freedom is to have no limits. So then limits become the enemy. And I think that in business too becomes a challenge, because then we're trying to just, you know, resist it, resist something that's very natural. We can be open to everybody. I would just say then it's very hard to market, because where are you putting stuff? How are you, you know, you can be open to what comes your way. And some people will be drawn just because of your point of view, your why, who you are, with no target market. There'll be some people who just resonate with that. And still, my question would be, what are the paths? How are people going to find you? If you're going to write something, where will you put it? If you do speaking, where are you going to do the speaking? So I would invite you to really sit with the resistance and see what might be underneath that for you. And remember, you're dating. This isn't committing to a certain group, but this is, I almost think about it like this. Think about it, maybe, I'm not going to tell you how to think, but a possibility is a way to consider it, is it's like coming up with a really beautiful present for a specific group of people. You know, you're going to a gluten-free potluck and you come up with this amazing gluten-free dish just for that group. You're coming up with something that's so special and so wonderful for those particular people that they're like, wow, that was so thoughtful of you. Thank you for creating that for us. It doesn't mean you have to do it again, though it would be nice if you could, if it feels like a fit. It doesn't mean you have to repeat it. It just means you get to try something. And you're probably going to get a better response on something specific than something broad. Tim said, my friend says I should just put a flyer in a coffee shop with tabs with my number to take. Maybe I should just see who calls. I think that's fine. I would do that too. And still, I would pick a little circle for this particular exercise. See what you can come up with. If you're really struggling, give a shout out to the wall and maybe other people could help. So Tad, could you post here again the definition of psychographics? I've lost my Skype connection. Perhaps it will be in the homework anyways. Oh, I see. So Tim, you beat me to it. Wonderful. Yes, and that will come in the email as well. All right. Let's see what else there is. That's it, and we're at time. So everybody, thank you so much. I hope this was useful. I think you're going to find the homework is probably the most useful part of this and the application of what comes from it. So you're all great. I would love it if you would post your biggest aha or what you got from this call, what was most useful for you. Yeah, that would help give me feedback. And I look forward to connecting with you all next week. Take care.